This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the premiere of the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Making the Cut series. Hopefully it's a series, it may be a one-time thing, we'll see. But I am JT, of course, very excited about this project. You've probably heard me on, obviously, many podcasts, but also many podblasts breaking down different cases for different wrestlers for their spot on the list. And joining me is, I think me and him did the first ever podblast for the series, and that is my buddy from up north, Mr. Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
It is so good to hear your voice again.
It's hot.
I know. It's so hot. I'm so sweaty right now in my home.
Yeah, I am too. All right, so I'm going to cool down for a second and set up the concept, and it's a pretty simple concept. I mean, obviously people have probably heard the four-year consideration series led by Will and his plethora of guests, and we're going to kind of do something similar. We're going to try and keep it pretty time-constrained, though. We're going to give ourselves an hour. We'll see how it goes. But
we'll see.
We want to talk about four guys in an episode, and that's what we're going to do, and we're going to not only just make the case, because I think probably all four of the guys we're talking about tonight, or at least three of the four, are going to be on everyone's list. We're also going to talk about kind of our thoughts on where they should land. And I don't think we're going to break down like NJPW for each one. I think we'll probably just hit the highlights and talk about where we're ranking them. Aaron, just to kind of level set, like where are you in the process? So I'm currently still like watching stuff. I've started putting some math into the spreadsheet. I'm through like the A, B, and C named wrestlers. I have like a mental checklist of who I think is going to fall where at some point, but I'm not too far along in the ranking portion of this thing. Where are you at?
I have right now, I have a tentative list made. And so far I have, just so I can give you a precise thing, I've got about 120 guys listed.
Okay.
So far. And I have about, I would say about 15 more that I really need to like go into depth with, like Perfect. Mostly from the, pre Hogan era guys. Like I've been going through a lot of that stuff, mm-hmm. but I got a bit more to do there before I really, hunker down and finish up.
Yeah, and there's some guys over on Kayfabe Memories, and I've gotten some emails and comments like really stumping for those 60s and 70s guys. So if you are looking for names or suggestions, Kayfabe Memories message board is a pretty good spot to go.
Yeah.
They have a lot of detail on the older 30F guys. And they are definitely stumping hard over there for these guys to be included. So it'll be interesting how the list plays out for sure. So why don't we dive in? We have four all main event level guys, I think. And, you know, one in particular we're thinking will obviously be probably top 5 or 10 for everyone. But why don't we start with one of the main event guys? And I think a guy that should be on pretty much every list. You know, maybe like a guy that 10 years ago wouldn't have had the, I don't want to say respect because I think that's the wrong word of this guy. But I don't know, I guess just kind of the enlightened, God, I'm saying 10 years ago, like 10 years ago, 2003. God, fuck, 14 years ago or so. I think... like before, I don't want to say enlightened, but just the way people have evolved and thinking and looking at wrestling, I think this guy's stock has risen from an in-ring perspective, and that's the Ultimate Warrior. That's what we're going to start with. So first glance, Aaron, just throwing a knife at the wall, like what number are you pegging the Warrior at on your list? Just like off the top of your head, what range do you see him in?
Well, I got my list in front of me, so I know where he is. There's a few guys that might be end up ahead of him, but right now I have him at 22.
Okay.
Which I understand might be high. I know I'm usually the PTB guy who's stumping for the Warrior on all these things.
Right, right.
And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about him is, and a few of these guys, is that like I actually really love the four-year consideration series. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of guys they really just don't care for at all.
Right.
So,
oh, really? His feud with Del Morocco was clearly garbage. The worst thing they ever did.
Ever. So, look, I just wanted to, like, get a different perspective on him. And, like, I think I might have him I wouldn't be surprised if I'm the highest person on the Warrior mm-hmm. In this list. But when you put him up to other guys, the highs are just so high.
Yeah.
Like, and the lows are not as low as you would imagine. Like,
no,
he's got
because most of his low came like just like squash little TV stuff here and there. Like his big matches, like you're saying, the big moments, he made, you know, he made them happen. He made it work. And you could argue, we were talking about this before we came on air, like he may be a top five or top 10 guy in the company when it comes to delivering in big matches.
Yes. And I would argue too that his stinkers on pay-per-view, I think there's only really two. I think he's pretty bad against Hercules at WrestleMania 4.
Right.
But that's just two kind of lumbering guys.
And he had just started. I mean, you know, he was still pretty raw at that point.
Yeah, I would put that, and I'd put that Goldust match, which might be the worst match I've ever seen in my life.
That's not even a match, really.
No.
Goldust was hurt. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does. But it's not really his – I mean, Goldust couldn't even wrestle because of the knee injury. So they were really set up to fail, and I'm not going to ding him too much for that. You know, his – let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about the big moments, right? The ones that make him check in super high for you. So even beyond matches, you have the Honky Tonk SummerSlam 88, obviously. The match with Rude at WrestleMania 5, really memorable moment. Rude and Heenan getting their first title win. SummerSlam 89, awesome match, awesome finish, great commentary, just the whole thing. You know, not that he gets credit for Jesse ripping Tony, but it's part of the match.
Yeah, it's the best.
His Andre stuff is interesting because Andre was pretty much just cooked at this point, and he's just jobbing in 30 seconds because that's all he can do at this point. So, I mean, memorable moments, I guess. Sure. Nothing match quality came out of it. Rumble 90. Awesome big time moment with him and Hogan.
He's so good in that match. Like he's great. And that moment with – they've tried to recreate that moment with Hogan every Rumble before, I feel, the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And the fans just never bite.
Right, they never care. I mean, Vince, and I know WrestleMania 6 didn't end up drawing as well as he had hoped, but I mean, at that moment at Rumble 90, he must have just been salivating at what was to come during that moment. So, and then of course WrestleMania 6, iconic moment. Rumble 91, pretty famous moment, was losing to Sergeant Slaughter, obviously with Savage and everything, and then WrestleMania 7. Great moment. His return to WrestleMania 8, huge moment. Getting locked in the casket by Undertaker. The Jake Roberts stuff, like, you know, great moments. His match with Savage at SummerSlam 92, pretty much his last probably great match. And then the 96 run, kind of forgettable. But even his return to WrestleMania 12 is a super memorable moment, just destroying Triple H, one of the few guys
ever. It's the best moment in company history.
Right? So, all right. I just spewed a lot of things out at you. Like, did I catch everything that pretty much puts him high on your list?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I would mention that really flies under the radar, I find, is how good he is at the Survivor Series usually.
Yeah, yep.
He's always really exciting, and I feel that the format really helps him because he's good at those little sprints. So he comes in, he sprints, he does his stuff, he gets out, you know?
Right.
And when you look at all that, like when you look at his pay-per-view record, it's stellar.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's up there with anybody else from that era in terms of quality. Like you said, that Rude SummerSlam match is tremendous.
Oh yeah.
Like they're both breaking out pile driver. Like for people who criticize him for only doing clotheslines, please rewatch that match.
Right.
Because there's all kinds of things, and his selling is good in them. Mm-hmm. And the match with Hogan, I mean, not only is it's well worked and it's fun to watch. But what they were hoping to, like, I mean, the intro was Vince screaming about them being constellations, right?
Yeah, gods and stars.
Yeah, but that's how they did the match too. Right. Like when they're throwing bombs at each other and hurting each other, and there was nothing like that before. Like, for me, like in terms of rating matches, like I tend to rate more a combination of work rate and moment, and you can make an argument that that is one of the most epic matches in company history, Hogan
for sure. And then, I mean, a year later, you have arguably the greatest WrestleMania match of all time, or at least a top two.
Well, when we did that poll a couple years ago, I think it was when we were on the message boards, I believe this came in second to Austin Hart, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, we did it. We ranked every match, remember, a couple years ago?
Yes.
And then 2 years ago, we ranked every match, and that came in second there. So that was... In the match rank project, and this year we did the lists, and it clocked in high, like on every list. I mean, the story is fantastic, and the match is tremendous at the moment. I mean, can argue maybe it has a little bit more to do with Savage's story, that match, than Warrior, but Warrior plays his part expertly there.
But it wouldn't have worked as well with someone else.
Right. No, definitely not, because of their history.
Yeah, and you needed Savage in there with someone who could destroy him.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at – I mean, if you just take those two matches, like I would rank both of those at 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. There's not many guys in company history that have 2 5-star matches.
In WrestleMania main events.
Even that, yeah. But right. even beyond that,
right.
Like to think of someone like I mean, we will over time, but just in terms of one-on-one matches that are 5 stars, mm-hmm. There's really not that many.
Right. I mean, Steve Austin's probably has maybe the most. Him and Shawn, I guess. I don't know who else.
I don't even know. Like Shawn probably, but like for me, Shawn's are all against Undertaker.
Yeah.
Ramon, but it's a right. ladder match. Like again, I don't want to shit on it because it's a ladder match, right. but there's something there, right? Austin for me probably has.
What do you have, Shawn and Mankind? Is that 5?
I have 4 3/4.
Okay,
but it's just because of the finish.
Right. All right. So you got Austin has the you know the Dude Love match, which I think is a 5.
That's the best.
Yeah, I mean that's an awesome match. Both Brett matches are probably 5s. I think.
Angle
is 5 in my eyes. It depends how you feel about Rock, those matches. I mean, those are all in the 4.5 range to me.
Yeah.
Triple H depends how you feel about the 3 Stages of Hell. I know Scott would have it at 5. I'm not sure if everyone does, but
I rewatched that one this year. I had it at 4.5.
Okay. So I would say he's got at least 4. I think he's got Foley, yeah. The Hearts, and Angle. So he might be the leader for 5-star matches.
And Austin, I mean, Austin should probably be in everyone's conversation for top 5.
Right.
I think, you know? Yeah. And I wouldn't put the Warrior that high. There's no. That's as much as I do like him, it's not fair.
What do you think of his promo skills? Because, it's one of those things where you have to look at it from what the character was designed to do. And his promo style and the way he spoke and talked worked for that type of mercurial, manic, you know, out of control character. Like, that's... He was supposed to be a fucking bizarre nut from outer space. You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. what he was.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what people wanted him to do.
Right.
Like, do you want him cutting the slow Jake Roberts promos? Like, with the face paint and the veins popping out of his arms? Like, when we think about promos, I mean, we're talking about promos and character work, right?
Right.
And it all worked. Like, it all kind of went together. Did it make any sense? No. But he didn't make a lot of sense. And that's what actually kind of set him apart from everyone.
So what keeps him from being higher in your mind?
There's just better. For me, there's just people that have made I do see the work rate argument. Like if there was any sort of I think the NJPW system we're using is great and it works. But if there was any flaw for me, it's that work rate and great matches are not in the same quality.
Right.
And it's in the same category. So we've separated them. So I think if you look at his work rate, he doesn't have – like he doesn't do a bunch of moves.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do things smoothly. So he gets docked a little bit there. He definitely gets docked for longevity.
Yep.
He wasn't there that long. As much as I like his character work in promos, mm-hmm. I don't know if his promos ever talked anyone into a building.
No, like, and his character never really developed. I mean, he was always just the ultimate warrior. Like, he was in some really good stories, but he always was legitimately the same person. The only thing you could say maybe he developed was the feud with, you know, going into WrestleMania 6 with Hogan, him ascending to that godlike tier that he wanted to be at. Like, that's like his only ever motivation that we ever see, besides just being a nut that wants to win and have his little warriors and all that stuff.
Well, except for when he questioned the gods after
yes,
he couldn't,
yes.
or when he started wearing the duster. That's his character development.
And when he threw up from Papa Shango.
Yes, well, anybody. I mean, that'll change you when a voodoo man puts a curse on you.
True.
But I think those things, and like, you know, what's funny about this whole process, and what I'm learning about the more I do my list, is that you have an idea of where guys go until you actually start ranking them. And then when you actually really scrutinize, okay, this person versus this person. Like, I mean, when I look at the guys around Warrior in my list, like the guy right above him is Daniel Bryan. Like I have Daniel Bryan at 21 kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it's like, in a lot of ways they're similar because the longevity is similar. The connection with the crowd is similar. But Daniel Bryan just has a much bigger scope of great matches.
Right.
Like not as epic as Warrior. But he also had a different connection to the crowd. I think in a lot of ways, Daniel Bryan was a little more over than the Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. You know, I have Andre the Giant a couple of spots above Warrior, but that's because, you know, he's Andre, he's iconic. Right. You know, I think if the Warrior had stuck around a little more, or had quality heel opponents after WrestleMania 6, I think he might have been bumped up a little bit on the list.
Yeah, and we're not really factoring in like drawing or success. Because it's such a we've dove into this so many times on these shows, but it's so hard to really judge that given how throughout the history of the company. But after he wins WrestleMania 6 for that year I'll give him to the Rumble because that's a really good moment. There's not much there, and is it his fault? No, but he still could have brought enough to the table to make those feuds draw, and he was still overshadowed by Hogan. And
yeah,
I mean, I like the Rude stuff, like. Their match on SummerSlam main event to set up SummerSlam was pretty good, and then the SummerSlam match is pretty good. But then you start to look at it, and you're like, all right, so he has a lot of big moments where he's really delivered, but it's usually with Rick Rude, Randy Savage, and Hulk Hogan. You know, like there's really nobody else in there for him to talk about like a variance of opponents where we can see that, all right, Warrior can get it done with guys across the board. And, you know, he never really had a great match with Mr. Perfect or like Ted DiBiase. But those are guys that didn't always have great matches either.
Yeah.
But his best stuff is Savage at SummerSlam 92, Hogan, Rude. You know what I mean? So what is that other big, great match he had with someone not those three guys?
Yeah, there isn't, you know, like he's got other moments. I mean, you could make the argument he wasn't placed in the same opportunity with other guys.
Right.
Like, it's not like he had – I mean, they didn't book him with anyone else, really, right? What I – you know, a dream match I think we never got, which I think would have been really good if we ever got, was if they would have run him and Flair in 92.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just feel like that would have clicked really well.
Yeah, and I think they were planning on it. I think they were getting there. And then Warrior just got fired for the steroid stuff. Like, you know,
right?
that was the original plan, I would think, is that something along the lines of Warrior taking the title off of Flair. I mean, the timeline there is all shady. Like, I forget if Warrior was already gone. I don't think he was yet when Brett won the title. So I know the everything's kind of, you know, hacked up in that time period because everything going on. But I do think Warrior Flair was planned for some point in there.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as like he had success against the same opponents, like if you look at some of the other people those opponents fought,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them never reached the same heights as they did with Warrior.
Right.
Like no one had better matches with Rude than Warrior.
No, definitely not.
And Rude gets
not in the WWF anyway.
Oh no, not in the WWF. Maybe Sting in WCW
or Steamboat.
Like, yeah, you're right. Steamboat. Oh, that Iron Man is fantastic.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that like it can't just be Rude.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. The argument against Warrior is always that he's carried by this guy,
no,
this guy,
no.
this guy. Well, then why didn't Rick Rude carry Jake Roberts to a great match?
Right.
Like why did Macho Man have better matches with Ultimate Warrior than he did with Ted DiBiase?
Mm-hmm.
And that's always kind of been my defense of him in terms of work rate and match quality.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and when he had to turn it up a notch, like you mentioned the SummerSlam 89 match with Rude about him varying his offense and being hard hitting. I mean, they do the same thing as SummerSlam 92. Like him and Savage just beat the shit out of each other in that match. And that's another one that has a good storyline woven into it. And again, another kind of crappy finish, but It was really well executed. And I think there's something to your point, too, about the Survivor Series. Like, 89 is super memorable where he beats up Bobby and then runs him down in the aisle after and kind of ends that whole feud that he's had going on for, like, 2 years. He also has the Weasel Suit matches that were pretty fun, like on the house show circuit in 88. Was it 88 or 89? I think it was 88 they had those. And then Survivor Series 90, too, like running through Perfect and
Demolition.
Right, Demolition. And, like that was a cool moment, but... Yeah, I mean, he didn't have that signature world title feud. And then even the match with Slaughter is kind of just a match. Like, they don't really feud going in. You know, like, Slaughter's just kind of doing his thing, and Warrior's just champion. And Warrior's actually feuding more with Savage leading up to it. Because they have that match on, is it Saturday's main event or the main event or TV? There was some match they had. And that leads into the winter because Savage was pretty much hurt during that time.
I think it sticks out because, like, this is something I'm thinking about a lot of guys. When I started to look at, like, feuds, and I find as you get to, like, once you get past 2002, guys kind of stop having feuds. They just kind of have matches against each other.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what that Slaughter match feels like.
Right.
It just stands out because in that era, everything else was built around feuds.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, you could argue Feud was a part of the match because Savage and Warrior was the feud that he cost them the title. And speaking of sticking out, you get the blowjob promo in the, earlier in the show where Sherry's like basically offered to go down on the Warrior for a title match for Savage. And that, but that plays into the finish later, no pun intended. But it's, I mean, the Savage feud just encapsulated all that because Savage first started challenging him like back in November. So that's played through there. So, all right. Any kind of final thoughts on Warrior? If you're really trying to sell him on anything you want to point out that maybe people aren't like aware of already?
Well, look, I mean, people need to take a look at his matches. No one was like him at all.
Right.
Like no one. He had intensity like nobody else. He pumped you up like nobody else. And I think he was the precursor to a lot of the more intense characters. Like something we don't really talk a lot about in this, and I think we should, is influence.
Right.
Like I think he had a pretty decent influence on the company as well.
Yeah, that's probably under nuance. Where I would rank that. Like how
that's
he
where
influenced
I put it
guys.
Too. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I would look at those things and how unique he was, and how we give people slots on the list because people are memorable characters, and he was one of the most memorable characters. And if you really look at his catalog of work, he has the work to back it up as well.
Right. All right. So there's the case on Warrior. You know, influence too, like it's funny because he reminds me a lot of a guy we're going to talk about in a few minutes after our next guy. But
yeah.
It's kind of the evolutionary version of him, I feel like. But all right, let's talk about our next choice on this list, and that is Edge, the rated R superstar, of course, into the Hall of Fame. What is like... There's like three things that stick out to Edge when I like just think of him as a person in wrestling. The three things I think of are the tag team, like rejuvenating the tag division with all like the garbage matches and the comedy with that and Christian, being like a super man whore with Lita, and SmackDown. Like when I think of SmackDown, I think of Edge and The Undertaker. Like those are the two guys that defined that whole decade of SmackDown to me. And I think there's something to be spoken of about that he was in a time where it didn't really build territories or the promotion around a guy. It really felt like they built SmackDown around Edge. Like it was Edge's show. He was always on SmackDown. I don't think he ever was on Raw. I'm pretty sure he was on SmackDown from the initial draft all the way through. I guess when he came back at 04, right? He was on Raw, but it didn't last too long. He was back on SmackDown eventually.
And that was his worst run.
Right. I think. And the only thing that saves it really is just the, you know, Lita and then the ECW stuff. But he pretty much Mr. SmackDown. And I think there's something to be said about that. Like during a time where he was like the torchbearer, the face of an entire brand, of an entire program, where he is synonymous with SmackDown. Like I picture him when I picture SmackDown during that era, just on top of everything, all the feuds and angles and title matches. And for better or worse, a lot of it, he was the guy in charge. There's a lot to talk about with Edge, and there's a reason you want to talk about him, right? That's because you feel like he's kind of getting dumped on in a lot of these broadcasts that we've got going on.
Well, I was listening to the last For Your Consideration, the one about it was the Clash of the Titans one. We're talking about the early guys, and it's weird that Edge kept coming up in terms of like someone saying, oh, Edge is not on my list, like a bunch of times, and it came up at least twice. And complete full disclosure, I hate Edge. Like, I don't enjoy him at all as a professional wrestler. Okay? Like, I never connected with him. It just didn't work. Guys, to me, seems preposterous. Like, I even when I'm doing my own list, I can't think of 100 guys that had a better career than him. I have him in between kind of 25 and 35 in terms of overall.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's almost begrudgingly because I don't really like his work.
Right.
Like, but you can't, for me anyway, you can't look at his body of work and remove him from the list. Like, he's got too many high up. If you look at his nuance, he's got everything there that we're looking for in nuance.
Mm-hmm.
He was there forever. He worked both as heel and face, single tag, and he was a truly hateable heel.
Right. Oh yeah.
In a time where, it became cool to be the cool heel.
Mm-hmm.
No,
and don't forget too. Yeah. He was a heel that was getting booed against John Cena at a time where John Cena was getting booed against fucking Triple H. You know what I mean? Like other guys, like
right.
Edge. You know, Edge was getting booed, and Edge is a guy too that had in a time where not everyone had great chemistry with John Cena. He was arguably his best opponent for years until I mean, I guess you could throw Umaga into the mix, and then until Punk showed up. But I, you know, Edge was always kind of the guy that had the best matches with Cena for years.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you look at, like, I mean this is kind of kayfabe, but you look at the sheer amount of titles he won.
Right.
He won 31 titles. Like, he was on top of something almost his whole career.
Right.
Pun intended. and then, like, besides the titles, you look at the jump up stuff, and it's just a list of all time great things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about the tag team, and it's funny because when you look at that tag team division, you would think that Edge, if you just looked at it, Edge and Christian don't seem to fit in there,
right?
With the Hardys and the Dudleys, it's like it almost looks like two single guys, but they were really the glue that held that thing together for that year and a half run those teams had. Like, the ladder match with the Hardys at No Mercy 99 is tremendous and really set the stage for the next three big ones, which are all great. And then you look at his feud with Kurt Angle, which gave, I don't know, like a couple of 4-star matches. And then you get his SmackDown 6 stuff. You know, the SmackDown 6 stuff is tremendous. That tag team match where him and Mysterio fight Angle and Benoit is quite possibly the best tag team match in company history. Then when you get past the SmackDown 6, I mean, you get the whole Money in the Bank thing, which is super memorable. The first cash in, which is incredible. The Cena series. The series with Foley, the WrestleMania match with Foley, which is great.
The match with Flair.
Oh, God, yeah, I love that match with Flair. Is it TLC or is it just Ladder?
It's TLC on Raw, yeah.
That's right.
And they had good build-up, too, where they do because Flair had gotten the DUI and Edge mocks it. Remember, he does, like, the fake DUI video, and then...
The Road Rage.
Yes, yep, the Road Rage. That's what it was, not DUI. I guess they wouldn't mock a DUI. well, maybe they would at that point. But it was... Yeah, no, that's a crazy match too. That's Flair during his Randy the Ram wrestler run, where he's just 60 years old and going out there and having fucking garbage hardcore matches. But no, that was a really good match too, and that was all during that condensed period. I mean, the only thing that sucked, and this again has nothing to do with him, was he didn't get that run with the belt. Because remember, he popped ratings the night after the cash-in.
Got to get Triple H that WrestleMania main event.
Right, and you take the trade-off. He has a match with Foley at Mania, which ends up being great. And then the ECW shit is awesome, too. Like, at One Night Stand, the six-person with him, Lita, and Foley. Like, that is an all-time promo before that match, too. But that is just, like, epic stuff. But, God, I'll let you continue on.
Oh, and well, this – and to me, honestly, this is where it kind of dips off for me. As much as he was the face of SmackDown, like
right. –
My problem with Edge is that I never bought him as a main top guy. There was something about him and the way he wrestled that always felt not quite on par. Like when he was wrestling The Undertaker, it was always like, he's got no business in there with The Undertaker.
Right.
Like, this man will demolish
him. But they had
him.
Great matches too there. I mean, the two
yes.
of them. Like, I mean, the WrestleMania match, you could argue, is one of Undertaker's best ever non-gimmicked up, you know, any kind of goofiness match. Like, that is just a straight 25-minute match. And, like, so non-Shawn Michaels division. Like, that is,
right.
like, one of his best just straight matches with no gaga, no bullshit. I mean, even, you know, all the Triple H matches that he had that everyone loves or, you know, some love and like, those are all gimmicked up, even the WrestleMania 17 one. Never even, you know, depends where you stand, like, on the Austin matches. Like, I'm trying to think of, I guess, the Kurt
Undertaker?
Match. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to go Kurt and maybe Punk. Like,
right. That had some frills to it, but I guess not many.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say Angle, Punk, and Edge are probably the three.
Oh, and Batista. Don't forget Batista.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. What do you think? Like, the WrestleMania one, I guess, isn't too gimmicky.
Yeah.
Because the rest of them all are. Yeah, okay. So
yeah.
Those four. But, I mean, Taker's had millions of matches. So, I mean,
yeah.
Those, you know, four. Edge is on the very short list of guys who got great matches out of Undertaker in a non-garbage match setting where it's a straight in-ring wrestling. Like, I don't know if they even break a table in that WrestleMania 24 match. Like, the Batista, some of the Batista stuff or the Punk one, right? Don't they at least go out, like, to a table?
Yes.
To the table and to the outside? Like, I feel like the match with Edge has, like, nothing. It's a straight wrestling, and it's really, really good.
And it's very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you think about how many guys didn't do that.
Right.
Like, with The Undertaker. Now, Undertaker was at different places in his career and stuff like that, too, but it's got to count for something.
Yeah, and it's the fact that it's a WrestleMania main event.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big time spot for Edge to deliver in, and he did it.
On a show with a lot of other top guys.
Yeah.
like that triple threat on that show, which I also really like, could have easily been the main event with Triple H, Cena, and
Shawn and Flair could have been the main event.
Yeah, or even Big Show Mayweather.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's not unfeasible that that would have been the main event. So to put that on and to have that confidence speaks volumes to what they thought about Edge.
And I think you can say too, like, he was a big deal in the company at a time where the roster was like stacked. Like, I mean, his on top run is 06 to 11, where he's like a main guy. Like, that is a heavy time in WWE history of like just big time names like around. You know, you see dips every few years. Like, the roster's loaded into 02, right? And then it bottoms out 03, 04, 05. But by 06 yeah. again, you're really filled up with top-heavy guys. Like, Undertaker's working a regular schedule. Triple H, Shawn Michaels is back full-time. You know, John Cena, Randy Orton, Big Show's back, Rey Mysterio. Like, a lot of big names are out there that could work, you know? And he's hanging in with all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, to me, the knock again is that, like, like, for instance, when he teamed with Orton,
yeah,
right? I was thinking, why is Orton slumming it?
Right.
Like, that was always my perception of him. So I understand that knock,
yeah.
right? But then again, he's just consistently excellent in his matches. Now, he's got some warts.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's not the best seller in the world. Like, he has trouble with that in terms of his matches. Like,
long-term selling throughout the match, yeah.
Yeah, like, I remember his match with Guerrero at SummerSlam 02. Like, Guerrero beat his shoulder into oblivion for the whole match.
Right.
And then
spears him.
Spear.
Like, and like his spear is weak, too. I mean, that's, you know, that he uses it as a move for a decade. You know, and there's been a lot made of that, too, like how weak looking it was.
Well, you can't go from Goldberg to Rhino to Edge.
Right.
Like, and then, I mean, it got worse when it was Christian doing it.
Yes.
We can't keep getting smaller.
No, we cannot. I mean, I'll give you this. Edge got it over, though. Like, they protected it. You know what I mean? Like, he hit it, and it was a big deal.
I would also say that, I mean, just thinking of his spear makes me think of this. His facial expressions in the ring always drove me insane.
Yeah, over the top.
But, like, I mean, I get you got to play to the back seats, but, like, they can see you.
Right, yes.
But all that being said, again, though, like, where do you have him? Like, where do you think he's going to land for you?
Yeah, I see him probably in the 20s. That'd be my guess. I mean, there's a lot to him, but he's a guy, too, that there's this balance, right, between not being around a lot. Like, you mentioned Ultimate Warrior, right? Didn't have a lot of longevity. Edge has a ton of longevity. But with that longevity, and we'll see this, I think, in a case with a guy like a Triple H and Undertaker and others and Kane and some other guys, right, that you're around so long, you're going to accumulate a lot of garbage, right? So it's like, no matter how many great matches Edge was having, and I think he had more great than bad most years, there's still a lot of time, downtime in those years where he is just like kind of like meandering around and having kind of blah-ish stuff. Like, I think of that feud with Kane.
Yeah.
Where I don't remember who was the face when he kidnaps Paul Bearer. Like, it's so convoluted. You know, some of the stuff with Vicky was a great pairing, but there was some kind of slogging in there, you know, within it. But, I mean, one thing you can't dock him is his character work from a nuanced point of view. Like you said, heel, face, tag team, singles, like, everything worked. Like, he was never really in a forgettable or forgotten feud, at least once he became a star. But even before that, you know what I mean? Like, the tag stuff all speaks for itself. And then he's got the matches with Christian, where he's feuding with him, right? And then he goes into Eddie. Regal, right? And then Eddie. I guess the blind spot is that the stuff with Booker and all that shit. The great matches with Angle. Well, you know, he progresses from feud to feud very well. Like, he's always in the mix in a memorable angle or feud. And his character work is always great. Like, whether it was, you know, banging Lita with the live sex celebration, whether it was Vicky. And it was always done, which is what I like about him. It was always done under the auspices of him just being a power-hungry maniac. Like, every angle, every story, every feud was always centered around him just nonstop nourishment to be, like, the guy. Like, he wanted to be recognized as the best. He wanted to control SmackDown. He wanted to control, you know, the tag division. You know, whatever it was, he was always, like, a guy just hell-bent on being a greedy champion. And whether he had to use Lita, whether he had to use Vicky, whether he had to use Christian, you know, whoever he had to use to get there worked well. And I think even right into his, you know, he's one of those guys like a Ricky Steamboat and a few others where it feels like you didn't get the, the gratification of his career winding down. Like, he just is kind of gone. Like, he has the match with Del Rio, retains, and then all of a sudden the next night he's retiring. Like, there was no catharsis to it. Like, we didn't get a retirement match or any of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's funny you just brought up Steamboat, because Steamboat is a guy who I would wager is on everyone's list.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, everyone. Mm-hmm. But I don't see how you could possibly put him above Edge.
Right, like, on a WWE list, absolutely not.
On a WWE list. It just doesn't make sense to me. And so, again, it just all becomes about the comparison, right? Like, there's guys, when I look at my list quickly, like, I can't put a guy – like, Jake Roberts is going to be on everyone's list, right?
Right.
But, like, I couldn't put him above Edge in terms of what Jake accomplished versus what Edge accomplished. Mm. I thought Jake was a better character and better promo and more memorable in a lot of ways, but, like – the resume is just too stacked.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I don't think you're wrong at all.
And that's two guys, you know, and you'll see. And when I say you, I mean anybody. Like, when you're going over your list and actually matching them up, like, it's it really gives you a different outlook on it.
How do you compare? I mean, I don't want to get into him because it'll derail us completely. But how do you compare Edge to Christian?
I have Christian lower on the list. I have Christian for me is about at 50.
Okay.
Versus Edge at like in the 25 to 30 range, right? Yeah. And it's just cuz I actually think Christian is probably a better in-ring worker than Edge, but Edge just has the resume is just way bigger. Yeah. And a lot of it is booking, but everything is booking. Like, Hulk Hogan wouldn't be in the top five if he wasn't booked the way he was, you know?
Christian's going to be a sneaky one. Maybe on our next one we'll have to talk about him, because he has almost, he's got a ton of great matches. Obviously, everything that Edge was in from 99 till whatever, 01, involves Christian, right? So they have pretty much everything together. And then he's got really good stuff where he gets himself over into 05. The really good matches with Cena, you know, all that stuff. The three-way with Jericho. The matches in feud with Jericho in 04. The stuff with RVD in 03 is pretty good. And then, obviously his run when he comes back is like one of the best TV workers in the company's history, I think, during that stretch where he's in ECW and SmackDown before he gets hurt. And then, of course, the series with Del Rio and the stuff with Orton and everything else.
Yeah.
So we'll save him for another day, but he's an interesting one.
I mean, the only thing I would say, and I not to get derailed, is that Christian didn't have great feuds.
Yeah.
Like, he had great – like, the series with Orton is great, but it's not a great feud, you know? And for me, those are what stick with me more.
Right.
Like, Edge had better feuds.
Okay. There you go. All right. Anything you want to throw out on Edge before we move on that we need to be aware of, cognizant of, check out? We didn't spend a lot of time on the 02-ish stuff he had, because I think there's some good stuff buried in there. Like, I think everyone knows kind of once he hits all the hot stuff, but 02 is a sneaky year for him. Like, the feud with Regal, they never really click, but the matches are all, like, fine. Like, they're good.
Fine.
And then he's got the series with Angle, which both are tremendous. And all three are. Do they fight on Raw, too? I feel like they have a match on Raw, too.
I think so.
And then he's got the stuff with Eddie later in the year. And you mentioned the SummerSlam match. Well, they upped the ante. And I remember this being a thing online, like, at the time, where he kind of, like, I don't know if he answered the criticisms or whatever it was about the selling. Because then they have a match on SmackDown that is fucking tremendous. It was like a no DQ match or something in the fall of 02, which was great. And then that goes right into the SmackDown 6 stuff. And then the team with Ray. And that match. I mean, 02 is like a sneaky, really damn good year. Everyone just kind of makes fun of the Booker stuff. But outside of that, like, he had a big year at 02. And then the injury really derails him, the neck injury. Like, when he comes back in 04, it takes him a while to find himself. And it really isn't until the Lita turn and all that shit in early 05 is when he starts to piece it together. But he's a good heel in 04, too. Like, when he first turns on, you know, with Benoit and their tag champs, and he's a heel, and he's got the cast. Like, all that stuff is pretty good.
Just probably his worst in-ring period.
Right, yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like 04-05, he'd bulked up a bit, and it just didn't look or feel right.
Well, especially as a face. Once he went heel in 05, like, his matches are better, but he was saddled with Kane, like, for a lot of that stuff, and then the Hardy shit. But another forgotten match that's really, really fucking great is the cage with Matt Hardy and Unforgiven.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I just watched that. It's great.
Yeah, that's like, a kind of a forgotten classic.
I would even say, like, the SummerSlam match, everyone was disappointed in it, but it was interesting and different and unexpected. Like,
looking back, it's way better than at the time. At the time, there was so much vitriol, and everyone wanted Matt Hardy to come back and go over. And then he just gets pummeled in 4 minutes. it felt dirty at the time. That's all.
Yeah, but yeah, the only thing I would say about Edge is if you're worried about where to write him, take 2 seconds and write down all the memorable stuff he has.
Right.
And I think once you do that, you can't leave him off your list.
And even the Jericho feud, by the way, in 2010.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's very good. And just remember, this is coming from someone who doesn't like him.
Right.
Like on top of it, like I don't want him on my list, but he's there.
TLC with Cena. Another great match. Just lots and lots of – just loads of great matches. I mean, he might actually be a contender for the 5-star thing too, depending on how you rank those TLCs in the ladder matches. I mean, there might be 3 alone right there.
Yeah.
And then TLC with Cena, I think, is 5 stars.
Yeah. Like, I just have to – like, I give more credit to a guy who has a – not necessarily one-on-one non-gimmick, but one-on-one versus the tag. But you can't deny how great they are, and he's a huge part of them.
And maybe the angle match is close too. That one, the second one, the haircut match.
Yeah, really very great. Good.
Okay. All right. So there you go. 2 down, 2 to go. We're halfway through. Our next guy is going to be probably a little bit quicker, which I think is fitting because he had a short runs and his matches are always short, but they're great usually. At least the moments are. And we kind of reference him as like the evolutionary Ultimate Warrior in some ways, and that's Goldberg. I've been dying to talk about Goldberg on one of these things. It's, every time we're going to do it, it seems like something happens and we don't get to talk about him. Right. But here we go. He is a guy that I feel like if we had done this a year ago, and the list is ending in like last, fall. No chance. Like he may be like 150 to 200 range. You know what I mean? Like just not even probably sniffing. And maybe that's not being fair. Maybe he's more just outside. Maybe he's like in the 125s. But this last run, even though he's only in like 4 matches, like
with
vaulted
the same
him.
Guy.
Right. All with the same guy, except for Kevin Owens, which was his worst match. To me, it bumped him into, I'm not going to say he's a lock for my list, but he is certainly now in the conversation. Like, I mentally am reserving him a spot in the 90s, and it's going to see if someone else bumps him out. But that's how great I thought this run was, because it was made to be a huge deal. And everything delivered. I was a big fan at the time, and I remember going to bed like after a night of arguments after that match with Brock at Survivor Series. But I loved it. Like, we didn't get shit like that, and that's what everyone wanted, like, fucking 10 years or 20 years ago. With Hogan, like, they were like, Sting should have killed Hogan to start King 97. Oh, you're paying for the thing you want to see. No, like everyone just want to see, to see that was shocking. It was like, holy shit, no one's ever, this has never happened before for a main event match. And what I hated was the irony that everyone bitching about it because, oh, it's only 30 seconds, it's not realistic, everyone paid to see it. But no, people were fucking bitching before that about like, oh, we're gonna have this fucking feud again, it's a waste of Brock, Goldberg could do so, and then you get to the match and then there, people were mad that it wasn't longer or we didn't get more out of it. But and I will say that I was one of the people that didn't want to see them fight again at Mania. Like, I didn't think we needed that, and I was pleasantly surprised because I was wrong, because to me that is one of the best ever WWE sub. How long is that match officially? Is it like 6 minutes
like
or 4 something?
4 minutes, I think.
4 minutes, yeah. I'm going to confirm right now. But I think it's one of the best ever matches of that length or lower in company history. It was 4:45. So one of the best sub 5 minute matches ever in company history. I mean, I don't know what is up there with it. Owen Hart versus 1-3-3 Kid is one that stands out in my mind.
That's it. Yeah. That's all there is.
But I mean, it's fucking fantastic. I think we both have it right around 4 stars. I mean, it is just 5 minutes of bombs and they never stop. Even when he spears into the barricade, like they don't even take a breath. They are back in just tossing Germans, dodging Germans. Goldberg's going, like the crowd's going nuts. The atmosphere is awesome. And that speaks a lot to how hard Goldberg worked to get himself in that position as a guy that had never really been credited for like being a strong promo, even in that 03 run. But his promos this time were just tremendous. Like that bumped his.
They were heartfelt and true.
Right. They were just real. They were, he just came out and just spoke truthfully and he was great at it. And to me, that was like, that bumped his nuance up a ton. Like that he could come out there and be this real character, this old guy looking like a real life Rocky. You know what I mean? Just looking for like one last fucking run for his kid to watch him. Yeah. And he wants to just come out here and show that he could still go. So his kid will have memories of him as a star. And he comes out and does it. And he has like one of the, best sub 5 minute matches ever, a great WrestleMania match and moment. And even the Rumble stuff was good too, where he kicks a shot at Brock and eliminates him right away. So yeah, that run. Now, if you want to look at his 03-04 stuff, I think there's some good stuff in there. Like the match with Rock is fine for what it was. I like the match and feud with Jericho because it had that real life heat behind it. That was good. And he, I mean, he was a rock star at SummerSlam '03. Like that was such a whiff. We've talked about it endlessly, but that was such a whiff. I mean, they would have blown the roof off of that place if he would have won the title in the chamber. And then he kind of sputters a bit from there. But again, he's wrestling an injured Triple H for the most part. And then his big match at the end of the year is a fucking three-way with Triple H and Kane. And, you know, he's losing the title there. And then he's good at the Rumble. And then the feud with Brock is pretty good, building up. And then that match is just, you almost have to disqualify it. I mean, it's the most unique.
That's not their fault.
This is the most unique match in like WrestleMania history, not for the good reasons. But for him to come back all those years later and revisit it and then wrestle the same fucking guy in the same spot. He's on his way out the door. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like almost an identical situation and they have an awesome, awesome match. So yeah, that's my thoughts. I think this run was good enough to get Goldberg into the conversation, which I don't think he would have been a year ago.
Quite a filibuster, my friend.
There you go.
But I agree with almost everything you say. I would just like to add that, he still looks like a megastar.
Right. Feels like one. Just is a star.
Yeah. And they don't have that anymore. Like, I mean, you got Cena, I guess, and Brock. But once you get past those two, there's not a lot of guys that feel that have that main event pro wrestler feel. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's a legitimate star. Whereas, like, Randy Orton is a great performer, but I don't view him as the same sort of legitimate star that Goldberg is.
Right.
And that matters. That certainly matters. For me, like, I think he ends up getting knocked off the list, unfortunately. Like, I like him, and I definitely am with you that he's in the conversation. I had him pretty high, a little bit higher originally until I did a second run at my list. And I think, like, what ends up hurting him, I mean, you have the obvious longevity things, but I think that first run, the booking, like, I think if he had won that match we were talking about at SummerSlam – he might get in on that first run if he has like that, if he just tears through a few more guys and,
right.
You know, but it just doesn't happen. I'll add with the Survivor Series match with Brock, not only were people saying it wasn't realistic. If you look at how they actually did the match, it was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he caught Brock when he wasn't looking the first time.
Yep.
And then like it made total sense. And I mean, if you ever watched a real fight, they don't last 25 minutes.
No,
I've never seen a bar brawl last longer.
Right. And now big dudes like that is beat the shit out of each other. I mean, just nonstop, just hammering away. Yeah.
That's it. And I mean, look, I'd just be reiterating what you're saying about Goldberg. Like, I'm on board with the WrestleMania 33. I didn't want to see them fight at WrestleMania. I wanted to see him fight someone else. But I got it. Like, I got it when I watched it. Like,
yeah, I can't think of a match better than he had with, like, anyone that he could have had a better match with than he had in that scenario.
I think it's the best match at that WrestleMania.
You may be right.
Maybe the tag ladder match, like, might be better, but I mean that's more of an indictment of the WrestleMania than it is than it is praise of the Goldberg Lesnar match. But I did like it a lot, and look, I don't have anything to add. Like, I think people should definitely consider him for the list, not just blow him off, because there is enough there. Like, he's got more memorable moments than, say, look, if I look at my list right now, like, I have him ahead of Dolph Ziggler on my list.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
And like, Dolph Ziggler's been there forever. Like, and I mean, he's got a couple of really decent matches. Mm-hmm. I got him ahead of Finley, you know, like, and I'm sure that's blasphemous for some, but like, I like Finley. I think he's great, but there's just nothing really super memorable to his run,
right.
You know? So it's, you got to kind of look at him. Now, for me, where he's going to suffer is, as just, like I told you off the top, I've got about 15 guys left that I got to look at. And if seven of them make it, he's gone.
Right.
Right, and I mean, I got guys like Adrian Adonis and Umaga, Pat Patterson.
So he's in trouble.
He's probably going to go out. But
he's a guy I think will finish, like, when we tally all the votes and release everyone. I see him probably finishing in like the 110s or 100 to 110 range. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he pops up there on a lot of lists just based on numbers. Like, he'll be like kind of right at the tail end or right on the outside for a lot of people. Like, that's where I'd picture him being.
Yeah, and I mean, even the things that would normally hurt him, like, shouldn't, like, they almost don't hurt him because he wasn't there long enough.
Right.
Like, he doesn't have a lot of nuance. Like, he's not, he doesn't play any different characters. You know,
you can argue he did this time.
Yeah, he's older. Yeah, you're right. He's more the elder statesman. But in the ring, it was all the same, which is fine. But I actually don't think it hurts him. Like, strangely enough. Like, it just kind of fits him. I don't want to see him playing an asshole. Like, because I don't think he's probably not an asshole.
Right.
Like, in real life. He just loves his son.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. That's yeah.
A nice old man who beat up Brock Lesnar.
And loves his son. He's an interesting case. Again, he's probably at the back end of most of this, if anything. But I think I wanted to speak to how great I thought this last run of his was, because it really was. It was so good. And to me, it gets him in this conversation in a place he probably wouldn't have been. But he's worth revisiting. I think he's a guy where if you're really struggling with him, I mean, you don't have to rewatch this run. You know what it is. Go back to that 03 stretch and see if you can dig anything up on him that maybe vaults him up. Like, he has decent matches with Triple H when Triple H could barely walk, like with a groin injury.
Yeah.
I think that Jericho match again is pretty pretty forgotten. The one at Bad Blood I thought was pretty good. I mean, you know, everyone kind of remembered, like, oh, when they put Goldust wig on him and kind of made him like a goof, but Whisker Biscuit, Rock was called him. But the I mean, even his debut was a cool moment when he comes out and breaks up the Rock concert. I mean, I think it's you know, I think he's worth a discussion. He's worth a look, especially if you kind of re-delve into that 03 time. And I always liked the way they used him at No Way Out as well with Eddie and Brock, how he doesn't make Eddie win, but he gets a shot in on Brock and leaves, but then the match continues so Eddie can win on his own merits. I always liked that part of it, and I thought he's deployed well there.
Yeah, in that whole feud with Brock, like, it just felt special. Like, these two monsters are going to kill each other. We didn't get the end result we wanted at that point, but it felt like a main event feud,
right?
Which, again, sometimes they have trouble doing.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and talk about our last guy here? And he's a guy that, I mean, if he's not on your list, then you probably shouldn't be submitting a list. I would think he's probably going to be top 10 at the least, probably top 5 for most people. That's the Macho Man Randy Savage. I mean, going in, I'm expecting him to be number 1 for me. I'll see if anyone knocks him off, but I have a hard time thinking anyone will. He's my all-time favorite, but I think he warrants the spot. Like, I'm not just putting him there because I love him so much. He's one of the guy that has the most emotional feuds in company history. Like, nobody has the number of emotionally invested feuds of Randy Savage. Like, whether it, you know, the stuff with Liz to open up, and I'll leave it, you know, George Steele we'll start with, right?
Yeah.
As much as I hate those matches and I hate George Steele, it's still an emotionally invested feud. Like, you heard Johnny Sorrow talk about it on the 4-year consideration because he was watching at the time. That was before he was just checking in on Saturdays for everyone else.
Right.
About.
With his family.
Yes, with his roommate. But that, I mean, that, like, you know, people who watched that feud unfold live at the time, which I did not, it was emotionally investing. Ricky
and
Steamboat.
Perfect for the character.
Right. Oh, yeah. A perfect fit. You're right. Absolutely perfect. And, you know, as a more recent example, on Jeff Learns Wrestling, my buddy Jeff Machado, we're doing that show. Like, he liked that feel. Like, he likes that stuff. Like, he's into George. We had a fight over George Steele on the last episode. So, like, he liked it. Like, he dug it. So, all right. So, George Steele. Then you get into Ricky Steamboat, another emotional feud. Then we get into the Mega Powers, year-long storyline, filled with emotion, right? He finally wins the world title at WrestleMania 4. Hogan's his buddy. Then we get all the stuff unfolding where he slowly turns jealous and has the issues trusting Hogan with Liz. We blow up at WrestleMania 5. That continues throughout the summer. He's still warring with Hogan. Then we get into 1990, which you can argue is probably his slowest year. But even the feud with Dusty, while not emotionally investing, is still pretty fun. And Savage throws himself so deep into that King character, you have to admire it, like, just how into it he got and how much he plays it up. So that whole year, he's pretty much with Dusty, and then he's hurt at the end. Then we get it right into the Warrior stuff in early 91. So, again, a super emotionally investing feud with Warrior and Liz at the end of that match. Just tremendous. Retires, comes back, has the stuff with Jake Roberts. Again, super emotional. You're invested fully in that feud. You know, it's so... Just everything about it is so draining, that feud. And then he goes into the Flair stuff with I Had Your Woman and Force Was Yours and all that shit. And then he has the Summer Champion. And then, you know, that ends. And then we get the, you know, 93 kind of spins in and out. And then even the feud with Crush was, like, pretty invested because they were, they're built up well as friends on TV, and then he turns on them. Like, that's all really well done. So, I mean, just the Flair, the Roberts, the Warrior, like, all those feuds alone, like, are just so, you know... Just emotional. Like, no one brings out the emotion and the heart that Savage into these feuds.
No, and the emotion out of the viewer.
Right. Yep.
I think if you look at that run, you could almost imagine that run was written start to finish before it started.
Yeah.
Like, he comes in, he's the hot free agent. He brings in his hot wife, right? People start hitting on his wife, right? Which leads to the Steamboat stuff eventually because it's George Steele, and then he gets jealous and then he hurts Steamboat and stuff like that. His wife stays by him, connects him with his friend, which turns him – connects him with Hogan, which turns him good. But Savage, based on his previous stuff, is jealous and crazy.
Yep.
Right? So it drives him insane. And that Mega Powers feud is probably the best – I would say it's the best story they've ever told.
Yeah.
In the company history. So you have that whole – that slow build, but it's all consistent. It all works, right? His friend beats him up. He goes in a downward spiral. He gets the tag stuff, you know, not tag stuff, the King stuff and all mm-hmm. that. And yeah, I would agree it's probably his low point, but it's still fine. Like, it's not bad by any means.
I mean, he spends a whole year feuding with 1990 Dusty Rhodes. Like, you know, there's only so much he can do. I mean, he makes a mixed tag with fucking Sapphire look like gold or something. Six. Like, yeah. You know, Jesse plays a lot into that, obviously, because he's so great at commentary. But, I mean, yeah. Savage is, like, working his ass off in that match, like, just bumping and selling like crazy for those guys. And, fuck, you know, he dragged Zeus to that watchable tag match to SummerSlam 89 as well.
Oh, it was fine. It wasn't that. You would expect that to be a zero-star match. Right. But after that King stuff, because he's so obsessed with the title, like which just flows into his personality, he goes after the Warrior. He picks a fight with arguably the strongest guy in the promotion, loses, has to retire. Again, it's all one story here from the beginning, right? But in that moment, it ties right back into the beginning with Elizabeth. Like when he stands in that ring – and finally, for the first time ever, opens the ropes for her. Mm-hmm. Like it's this beautiful capper of this basically this 5-year story. And even in that match, the storytelling in that match with the Warrior, as great as it is, there's a spot where he tries to do the Ricky Steamboat thing to Warrior on the guardrail.
Right.
Like it's like he was telling the story of his career in this match.
Yeah.
And then not only that, so you get that, you get the wedding and Jake Roberts and he gets pulled back into wrestling. He finally leaves and he's happy with his wife. He gets pulled back in and again through his wife, you know, becomes invested in a world title feud with Ric Flair and stuff.
Well,
like
even
that.
Before that, but the Jake stuff is, oh, I mean, Jake, that might be the most like involvement with Liz since the Steel stuff. And I guess since the Mega Powers, but yeah. Because Jake fucking hits her. Like I mean, that was you know, you never saw that. You know what I mean? Like, that was unbelievable that he slapped her across the face. Like, that was insane. And I think it's fine that they never really had, like, a blow-off big-time match because you just didn't need it. Like, Savage didn't need to pin him in a match. He just wanted to fucking beat the shit out of him. You know? Yeah. And that's what you get at Tuesday in Texas. It's like a 4-minute match and then this play afterward that's, like, crazy. And then I mean
Saturday night's main event too.
Right, yeah, and he beats him clean there and that pretty much ends it. But even that is like about to continue because Jake's going to hit him with the chair and then Undertaker makes the save. So it indirectly if it also turns Undertaker face. So it's like and then that goes right into the Flair stuff. So.
Yeah, and the promo he cuts after Jake hits Elizabeth is one of the best promos in company history.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember, but he's basically saying it's his fault.
Right.
His fault. And like
he's like punching himself in the face and stuff.
Yeah, no one has that inner rage. Like, right. He's just – you believe every second of him. And the Flair match at WrestleMania 8, to me, is completely underrated by mm-hmm. everyone. Like, it's one of my favorite matches of all time. And you're right about the Crush feud. So, but it's like when you look at those two things together, like that it's one consistent story.
Right.
And sure, that's booking, but that's also him.
Oh, yeah.
That's him plotting it out.
And he
that's
added him. So much nuance and depth to his character that he could tie it into all these things.
Exactly. The little looks to Hogan throughout that Mega Powers run. The fact that he sells a leg injury for a year in 1992. No one put that level of detail into their work. And so when you look at that, for me, this is the case. I have him at number one, too. And I don't see anybody dislodging him because I've placed my top guys and I've put them against each other.
Right.
And I'd have to hear a really compelling argument because – when you put together that one consistent – that whole storyline I was just saying, and the emotional investment he gets. Like, there's never a feud he's in that isn't a blood feud, number one.
Right. But, even the DiBiase feud is very heated, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, and I mean, even that, like, it was a championship feud, but it was about more than that. Like, and that's what it is. All of his matches were about more than the match. And that almost doesn't exist at all anymore. But he was the best at that.
Right.
And like you can – like when I look at my top five, like one of the things I keep coming back to is almost all of the rest of my top five or even my first seven guys actually are all the huge draws. the Hogans, the Austins, the San Martinos. You know, like
they're the top guys, the aces of the company, the promotion,
The Rock, Cena. You know, but I think what puts him apart is that number one, he has almost nothing that's bad. Like almost every feud is good. If some of the matches suffer, that's fine. But that emotional connection, and that's what I'd urge anybody who's really looking at him to really look at, because I don't think anybody has that.
Like right, I want to. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to talk about his promos in a minute, but I want to call three other feuds that we haven't talked about because they weren't on, like, two aren't on the national scale, and one it's still really good, but it's behind all the others. That one is the summer. I mean, if you tie in SummerSlam 92 into the Flair angle, right? So that's also really great stuff with all the Flair and Perfect playing the mind games, and that match is great. But then Survivor Series, when he asked Perfect to be his tag team partner and he breaks up him and Flair finally, like, it's almost like he knew what he, like, all right, here's my arch nemesis. Him and Perfect just took the title off of me with this plan. I'm going to drive a wedge and break them up and end this super team on top. And he gets in between them. He forces Perfect to Flair apart. And then, like, that's a really fun match, too. And the promo, which we'll talk about, the promo after the match is great with the turkeys. Him and Perfect have the little fucking turkeys and everything.
Yeah.
But two other feuds that are overlooked, and they're ones that really just come on my radar more from doing the PTB reboot going back to 85, but the series with Hogan in 85 to 86.
Excellent.
Yeah, not a lot of people may have seen those or knew about it. I mean, I barely knew about them until recently. Three match series in MSG, which is just phenomenal. Just like, oh, every match is so great. And then his longer feud with Tito than I ever realized. Like, I always thought his Tito stuff was like, he beat him and that was it. Like, and then he moved on to Steamboat or Steel. I didn't realize the run they had of all these great matches in MSG. And then in Boston and as well is in there, because then they have all the stuff with Bruno, which is great too. Like the tag stuff with Bruno, like all that shit. Like if you're looking for more reasons, like Savage is probably a guy you don't need to do additional research on if you're going to put him at one. But if you have him like at five and you want additional stuff to watch, like to see why he should be maybe even higher, I'd watch the Hogan stuff from MSG. I would watch the Tito, the Bruno, and then even those forgotten Steamboat or kind of hidden Steamboat matches that he had, you know, the one in Toronto and then the one in Boston. Like those are really good too, leading up to three. So just, you know, additional stuff. But his promos, again, just set him apart. I mean, just everything. There's so many memorable ones that you don't even have to like think about for more than a second just to throw out there, right? WrestleMania 8, like you said, just after that match is just the emotional outpouring after he wins the title from Flair is just great. Tuesday in Texas, like you said, where he's punching himself in the face. What's the other one? The turkeys with Perfect. Sorry, so there's 92. I had another one in my head that I just forgot. I mean, the jealous eyes of Survivor Series 88 when he...
The lust in the eyes.
Right, the lust in the eyes. You got jealous eyes. There's another one I'm forgetting. Oh, fuck,
I was always number three in the Mega Powers. You were number one.
This is so much good stuff.
Yeah.
There's another... Oh, the cream of the crop. Like, just all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's just such top-notch promo work. I know I'm forgetting one other one, like a big one. I'm trying to remember now. I had it at the top of my head before. But anyway, what jumps out for you, like, promo-wise for him?
You just name them all. Like, but again, what makes his... What sets his promos apart is that they actually feel real. Like, they feel like he is going through these things. And Hogan's felt real to a degree, too. But he was talking about prayers and vitamins and, you know, Donald Trump swimming on his back out of the Atlantic City casino. You know, like, Savage was talking about real issues. Like, you slapped my wife and it's my fault. Like, and I'm going to kill – every time Savage had a serious promo, I could legitimately see – think. Yes. I remember thinking he's going to kill that man.
Yep.
Like, his Randy Savage is going to kill a human being now. Like, and yeah, and like I, one of the first catchphrases too, like in company history, I would say, the ooh yeah.
It's definitely memorable. I mean, if you want to talk about how he transcends the influence, transcends pop culture, everyone fucking knew Macho Man Randy Savage. Everyone knew the big elbow. Like, anyone who didn't really know wrestling would still do, like, elbow drops. There's, like, a move and finger in the ear, the ooh yeah, the slap into a Slim Jim. Like, all that stuff was just transcendent of his character. Like, I mean, when he died, it was, like, it was everywhere when Macho Man Randy Savage died. I mean, he was definitely just an iconic, larger-than-life character, but he wasn't a cartoonish larger-than-life character. He was just the fucking Macho Man. Like, he was just the best guy, you know? Just the voice, the look. He was face. He was heel. He did great tag stuff, mainly solo, but he could do it. And he was always still himself. To me, that's always – we've talked about this before. I think we did talk about it with Mr. Perfect when I was with Ben and Greg. To me, the best heel and face turns are when you're still the same person. You're just acting you're acting the same, but your circumstances have changed, right? Like, that's savage to me. He's always, like, the exact same fucking person. Like, the only thing you can say he changed was just he started to respect Liz at the end. Like, that's it. Like, but other than that, like, he never really, he doesn't act more bad or more not bad. Like, he's always just Macho Man. It's just, he's on different
sides.
Only
after she saved him, too.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, and it was based on a foundation of character he'd been building for 2 years.
Right.
You know, like, it's like he turned heel again on Hogan, but we always knew he was jealous. Like, that was there.
Right. That was baked in from day one. I mean, that, they pretty much exposed that right out of the gate. That's like late 85. He's already doing that stuff.
Yeah. A question I want to ask you, and it goes a bit away from promos, but, like, you know, when we think about the top guys, like the real top guys, Hogan, Austin, Bruno, Cena, Rock, let's say, you know, where do you think Savage rates in terms of in-ring against those guys?
Above probably.
Yeah.
He was so fast. One of the fastest wrestlers ever. Like, I mean, just the speed that he could hit the top rope was like out of control, selling top notch all throughout a match. Like, that's what I think of when I think of his 92 run was him selling his knee. Like, that whole fucking year, I feel like he's selling his knee. He's constantly hobbled because it never heals. You know what I mean? Like, he's been hurt since Flair hurt at WrestleMania 8. He's hurt until, like, the end of the year, his knee.
Yeah.
So good at selling it. But just even, like, when Crush attacks him at the summit, the way he sells, like, the broken jaw and everything, like, that was tremendous. And he's great in that feud. Like, he is great.
Oh, he's amazing.
That whole feud, like, it's so well built. Scott and I watched all those for our reviews. And if you go back and read them, you'll read, like, all the detail that went in there. But it's way more than you may have realized. Like, when they started that whole thing and how long it plays out and how hot and heated it was, they have this brawl at this fucking tiny dump of a venue. They're like, it looks like an office. They're like, literally, like a fucking, just like a 1980s office. Like, that's what it looked like in the back. Like, the fake, you know, faux fucking paneling and everything that's in the back. And they're brawling down this office of, like, a, it looks like an insurance company or something. And this really hot pull-apart brawl. And then, you know, he comes out at Survivor Series and they get in each other's face. Like, that feud is very underrated for him.
And it's against Crush.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, was he even nominated for this project?
Crush? Yeah, I think he's on the list. So, I think, like, Terry Taylor is the only sad sack who had a serious run that's not nominated. But, no, I think Crush is on the list, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a good chance he'll make very few people's list.
He'll probably be in the 200s.
Yeah, right? So think, like, when you think about that, like, it's easy to have a great feud if you're The Rock and you're fighting Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
You know, it's a complete different thing when you're fighting fucking Crush.
And having, at the tail end of his career. I mean, this is 1993 into 94 we're talking about now, where he's pretty much been part-time.
Yeah.
But he's got so many other matches that exhibit how great he was in the ring, too, that, like, aren't part of those big feuds. Like the one with Bret Hart on Saturday Night's Main Event is really good.
Yep.
He had one with Jake Roberts when they're both heels on Saturday Night's Main Event. That was really good.
I liked his Yokozuna match.
Yes. Yep. That was very good. All the stuff, obviously, with Tito was great. He gets a good match at a fucking Pedro Morales, like a pretty good match.
In 86, right?
Right, yep. You know, the tag stuff with Bruno, again, like really high-level in-ring tag stuff. All the match with Steamboat. Another fun moment, too, is after he breaks Steamboat's throat and Bruno's in the back, like all distraught, like Savage comes back. He's like, oh, what's wrong with him? Yeah, is he okay? You know, like all fucking like wicked condescending troll, like dick move. And then Bruno just snaps and like fucking goes after him. Kind of a forgotten moment there, but yeah, just it's so much stuff. I mean, he just had iconic promo after promo and all those old superstars and challenge shows and everything where he's just in the back with the backdrop and like the cream of the crop one and the condominium on the moon. Like just like all that stuff is just so great.
Yeah.
Loaded with moments and matches. And yeah, I mean, I don't see an area he lacks. Like to me, he's the perfect score. Like to me, he rates a full 10 out of 10 in all those categories.
Yeah. Like I think he's probably the best professional wrestler they've ever had.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, I think that's fair.
Like and I don't know if he's the best I don't think he's the best worker the company ever had. I don't think he's the best promo the company ever had.
Right.
I don't think he's the best I won't say nuance because it doesn't make any sense. But I think he's so high in all of them, and then when you factor in that emotional level, it will combat any sort of argument. Because the argument I've heard against him is that he was never the tippy top guy,
right?
And it just in this one particular case for me, it doesn't matter because he was so consistently excellent,
and he was pretty much always at the top. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and you know, 88. He, I mean, even though in your mindset when you're looking at it from pay-per-views, right? Because you see WrestleMania and then you see SummerSlam. Oh, Hogan's always around. But he had that whole summer to himself. Because Hogan is off doing the movie. And then 92, he pretty much has the whole thing to himself, too. It's just, I think what hurts that 92 run is that there's nothing in that summer. There's, like, not any Saturday Night's Main Event. There's no King of the Ring. There's no big event. Like, there's no show between WrestleMania and SummerSlam. And he wins at WrestleMania and loses the day after SummerSlam. Like, there's nothing in there. And they were still doing the method where, you know, the world champion wasn't fighting on TV all the time. Like, that starts with Bret Hart that fall. So, the world champion wasn't on TV. You may catch him on a primetime, like, maybe once or twice during that run. I remember, like, he has a match with Shawn Michaels that was on air. Yeah. And then I think, like, IRS, he had one, like, from the European tour or something. But there's that really great tag match, too, during that summer when it's him and Bret against Shawn and Flair.
Yes. Kind
of like one of those forgotten matches. Just loaded stuff. So, I mean, I argue, who was the guy in 92? Like, they built the... Like, Hogan was gone. Like, who else was there? I mean, he was the guy. Warrior, yeah. I guess. I mean, but Savage was the, you know, A1 to me in 92.
Yeah, and... I mean, it's... For me, it's telling that as a kid, I liked him more than Hogan. Like, it was strange. Like, I look back and I don't understand why, but it's just because he was so excellent. And that was in 88.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And again, like, it's like... Had he been in any other era that Hulk Hogan wasn't in, like, he probably is the tippy-top guy of that era. It's just he's in there with arguably the most popular wrestler ever.
But I think it speaks to him that he still became super well-known in the world of, you know, the world. Like, he was still that big of a personality and name that even with Hogan in his way, he still was able to reach that prowess.
Right. And they had enough confidence in him to give him that run in 88.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pushed out of the gate. He is calling out Hogan within weeks of debuting. Like, I mean, they immediately knew that they had something in him. And that's fun, too. He does all the manager search stuff on TNT. Just great. I mean, anytime he's on the screen, to me, he's like, he passes that test, right? Whenever he's on the screen, you're looking at him. You're watching him.
Yep.
His manic energy, constantly moving all over the place. Never stops. Never stands still. Always just constant energy.
Yeah, and like I think for every argument you would have for not having him number one, there's a stronger argument why he should be.
Right.
Like the only argument I've heard, he's not the biggest draw. He stalled. His stalling was a bit at the start, and the hell was the last one? That might be it, actually. That's all I've heard. But yeah, like if you are considering him in your top five, I would ask that you really look at that emotional investment, and really put that up against other guys like. As much as Hulk Hogan was amazing, like, it's not the same. Like, people didn't care about Hogan the same way they cared about Savage. And I would argue that it's harder to care about a wrestler in the way they cared about Savage than they care about Hogan.
Right.
It's harder to actually be emotionally invested and be happy when he reunites with Elizabeth than it is watching Hogan steamroll a guy.
And you know what? The fans never turned on Savage.
No.
You know?
And he was the face. He was the face in that Mega Powers thing. Hogan had lust in his eyes.
Well, you know what's interesting? Jeff, watching that, when I asked him, he thought Hogan came off as the face, which shocked me. I was like, what?
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. I'm wondering now that we're rewatching from the start, because that was the first thing I ever showed him was the Mega Powers feud.
Right.
Maybe rewatching now, like everyone builds. Well, let's see if he feels differently. But the fans never turned on Savage. Like, he was just as over in 94 as he was in 88. Like, he is... It wasn't like, by 91, Hogan's getting booed. You know what I mean? Like, Savage rose above people growing up and growing out of Hogan. Like, they didn't grow out of Randy Savage. Like, he didn't grow past Randy Savage. He was so great. He was just fucking Randy Savage. He was just as real as it gets. So, all right. Any final thoughts on Savage?
No. Anybody looking at him, emotional argument, and really look at that storyline, like, from start to finish. Nobody has that. And if you're still worried about him, just watch his great matches again. Like, nobody's like him.
Nobody. Nobody at all. All right. I had a blast doing this, Aaron. Hopefully we'll do another one maybe in a couple weeks and touch on four other guys. Make this a bit of a series, as we said, making the cut here. Be sure to take part in the PTBN Greatest Duty Wrestler Ever Project. The details are at placemanation.com, but also if you go to the Facebook And the link is like everywhere. It's a pro wrestling only. It's everywhere. And we can add you to the group. It's a hidden group on Facebook. But just ask us on social media. We can add you if you're not part of it. We have discussions going on everywhere. We're in the comments at PlayStation.com. The comments are open there. We have discussions daily on the project. Pro wrestling only, there's threads there. Kayfabe Memories, there's a thread there. Twitter, Facebook, like we're talking about it everywhere. It's been bigger than I dreamed of originally when I came up with the idea back in the spring. And it really took off. So I want to thank everyone that's been part of like driving that, like you and Ben and Greg and Chad and Timothy and Will, of course, and Johnny Sauer, like all those guys that have really stepped up and Glenn, Steve Williams, like everyone that's really stepped up and fuck, we brought Parv back, which is like amazing. So I mean, everyone that's like stepped up and really made this a big time project to get other people involved. Like I really dug everyone. There's so many guys too that I'm leaving out that are just like new to the PTBN that are in the comments on the Facebook group, just like every day breaking down wrestlers and talking. And it's been so, I saw this mentioned PWO, like there were people that were hesitant to join this because of the bad taste that the Greatest Wrestler Ever project left in their mouth. And then they joined and they're like, oh, this is like way more relaxed and like laid back and a lot cooler than I expected. Like, so I've been so thrilled that we haven't had any like, there's been no skirmishes or like people quitting or fighting. You know, it's like, it's just been such a nice, fun project and discussion and feature to the site. So I want to thank
everyone. I don't get it. We're celebrating wrestlers' greatness.
Right? So anyway, we're all excited about it. So thank you to all. So be sure to follow us on social media. Subscribe to our shows on iTunes, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only. Rate us and subscribe there. And again, we'll be back soon. Of course, check out all the pod blasts as well. There is the Google Doc that's linked on that Facebook page has everything audio and written that we've done so far for this project. So if you're looking for kind of like a one-stop place to listen to everything, check that out. So, all right, I've said enough. We're out. Aaron, JT, we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Later.
I am what I am, and I am the Macho Man. Wall to wall, macho madness everywhere. It doesn't really matter because we're all in it together, and I will help you find the light at the end of the tunnel.
Macho Man.
One time.